Welcome to Process Breakdown, where we get proven and successful entrepreneurs to reveal step by step what's currently working behind the scenes in their businesses. Sit back, relax, and take notes as you discover how today's guest has been able to systematize their entire business so that it runs successfully without their constant involvement, like a well-oiled machine on overdrive. And here is your host.
Hi, my name is Owen McGavinowell, and welcome to episode 65 of the Process Breakdown Podcast. Are you selling your products or services to enterprise customers? Do you struggle to generate leads and close them into customers? In this interview, my guest reveals how he was able to systematize lead generation for enterprise-level customers and attract Fortune 500 companies as clients. You will discover the 7 steps to use to systematize and scale your entire sales process. Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Are you tired of being the bottleneck in your business? Do you want to get everything out of your head and document step by step how you get tasks done so your employees know what you know? Sign up for a free 14-day trial of Sweet Process. And now, let's get started with the interview. My guest today is Anil Juwana, and he is the CEO and founder of Witty Parrot. Anil, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Owen. I'm very excited to have this show.
That's awesome. So this, just to give the listeners a brief interest to what this call is going to be about, is, you know, if you are listening and you have a product where you want to sell your product or service to enterprise customers, then that's what this interview is going to be about. But let's give them a quick interest to, you know, what they'll be learning from here. So what exactly would the listener be learning during this interview?
Yeah, so the, you know, we are at a stage where we have established the product market fit, and we are trying to scale Witty Parrot platform to selling to the B2B customers. And I would be talking mostly in this interview about the lead generation process, the how we systemize the whole process all the way from lead generation to driving the prospects through the sales pipeline and eventually making them as a successful customer. So I would more talk about how the process is important in terms of scaling the company and how it can be replicated or cloned across the organization as and when we hire more and more people to scale.
Awesome. So basically, in summary, the listener is going to be learning a systematized way to generate leads and being able to sell to enterprise-level customers. So you generate leads through a system, and you also close the leads through a system, and particularly the customers are enterprise-level customers. So let's jump right in. What are some mind-blowing results that you now experience as a result of, you know, systematizing the process for acquiring enterprise-level customers?
Yeah, so the biggest accomplishment, which I'm really very proud of, is that we are getting Fortune 500 companies as our customers in the last 4 or 5 months. We are able to acquire as many as 6 to 8 big name customers, you know, such as VMware, Oracle, Kaiser Permanente, etc., which has helped us to even figure out what is the process. And also, once we understood and realized the process what works, then we started reproducing the same thing, which is yielding better and better results going forward. So those are the mind-blowing results that I'm very proud of.
So you mentioned during the pre-interview that you guys are now getting major Fortune 500 companies as customers. And also, you also figured out an email marketing campaign that helps you guys generate these enterprise-level customers. So that's awesome. And we'll be talking about that during this interview. So let's dive right into the first step. And you said step one is decide what the what customers to serve. Either you're serving an enterprise, professional, or a consumer type customer. But in this case, we are focusing on enterprise. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so, you know, decision to go with the enterprise customer or a consumer profile customers is one of the key factors, especially a lot of it depends on what kind of product you are building. And most of the time, so especially in our case, the product what we have built was resonating very well both with the consumer app as a consumer app, as well as it had a lot of potential for enterprises as well.
Yeah.
When we launched the company at launch conference about 2 years ago, we got really loud and clear feedback from a panel of judges that, you know, we have a really good opportunity to position the product as a B2B business product. So that's kind of helped us to more and more focus on thinking about, you know, what is the right direction. Because, you know, these decisions are so critical. It kind of changes the direction of the company itself. And as entrepreneurs, we have to really be careful in terms of thinking through, you know, what route we have to take. And a lot of factors, like in our case, I come with an enterprise background. I know exactly how enterprises work. That was a huge, huge factor which influenced me, apart from the panel of judges' comments, to decide to move towards enterprise market.
Yeah, I'm also thinking, like, you know, from that standpoint of deciding what customer or, you know, who to serve, it's kind of, if you decide right from the get-go that your customer is enterprise, then it keeps you from trying moving into several other directions that maybe, oh, how can we, you know, create this app so that it serves the regular, like, B2C consumers or, you know, and stuff like that. So it keeps you focused on what your product needs to be. I think that's why this is a very important step. And then another thing is the step number two. You said figure out what your value proposition is. So now the listener has decided that they're going to focus on enterprise, or they're already focusing on enterprise. But talk about why this step is important and what it's about.
Well, you know, when we build the product, right, so we think that, you know, we know everything, and we hypothesize the whole use case scenarios and then build the product platform with certain capabilities. But, you know, a lot of these things, what we assume things, are not necessarily true in most of the cases. Like, first of all, the product what we built, we were mainly focusing on selling this to sales enablement market. And all of a sudden, it gave us an opportunity to open up the market in the talent acquisition space, which is completely, you know, out of the blue, it just came as a big opportunity. The second thing is the product what we had, even for sales enablement, when we started getting initial few customers and we started demoing the product, and they give them the free trials and so that they can have a hands-on trial, probably the product features what we had was really meeting their 20-30% of the needs. But some of these initial customers are so critical that, you know, they really helped us to shape the product as well as the company itself in terms of positioning, as well as how to sell, and also, you know, being a reference customer who can advocate for future customers that we acquire. So it is very, very important to understand the day in the life of the target user that we are selling the platform to. Is so important. And also, you know, end of the day, if the end user doesn't realize the value in using the platform, they are never going to use the product, and then whatever we build will be a total waste. So this is where companies have to really spend enough time to understand what market are we are serving, what problem are we solving, is this really a problem that end user has, and is this helps the end user to you know, either improve productivity or do their job better. There should be some kind of an incentive and a stickiness associated with the product capabilities that makes the end user to go back and use a product again and again, which kind of establishes the sustainable business model.
And what I get from this too is that when you guys started out, you initially thought that your product would be focused on helping, you know, sales enablement. But then, as you know, you guys started having more and more enterprise level customers use it, you finally found a use case that even made more sense, which is the talent acquisition use case. And then even as you guys continue to work with these customers, you know, they ended up influencing the direction of where the product was going and even helping you guys get potential new customers. I like that. And step number three is, you say, experiment and refine the capabilities that drive adoption. Can you explain what that means?
Sure, definitely. You know, this is one of the biggest learnings in our in this company for me, is that you know, end of the day, is I'll take the example of VDPerrot. So this is our platform is a content productivity solution platform. Primarily, like I said, started with sales enablement, then found out an opportunity to sell to talent acquisition use case and also for customer support. These are the three use case areas where we are heavily focused on. And initially, when we started building the platform and positioning the platform, we were more positioning this as a consistency play for an organization where the brand protection is critical. Everyone speak with one voice. That was kind of our tagline. But, you know, we have different stakeholders in the company, or the end user, all the way from a manager who makes the decision to content authors who has to create content and then review, approve, etc. And eventually, the end user or salespeople or support rep or recruiter who eventually have to use the product day in and day out. And we have to make sure that the capabilities that we have enable all these stakeholders, particularly, we can't please all the stakeholders. We got to pick one stakeholder or one end user who really makes a difference to establish the adoption of the company. And it took some time for us to figure out, but we immediately figured out that, the end user for us, the real one user, if at all we want to focus, it's going to be the end user, which is a recruiter or a salesperson or a customer supportive representatives. Now, think of for these representatives, right? At the end of the day, for them, they don't care about the consistency. I mean, of course, they do care as a company, but for them, they're more focused on tactical, operational. You know, how many leads did I contacted? How many of them I converted into customers? How many candidates I'm able to reach out to? And then how many of them I pushed through the pipeline to become employees? You know, this is what on their mind because they are measured and compensated with those metrics in mind. So unless we have capabilities where they see this tool helps them as a painkiller on a daily basis, the adoption is not going to happen. So that is where we have to really, really careful in terms of picking the right end user who would make a difference in terms of adoption and identifying the right capabilities that really helps the end user to come back to the product and establish the stickiness.
Yeah, I guess this very step is really where you're doing some real research and in terms of that, doing experiments to find, what are the right features, I guess, that will help drive adoption, right? So you said that in the pre-interview that you guys did some experimentations throughout 2014 that helped you guys determine that. So can you share some of those experiments that you did with the listener?
Yeah, sure. We did experimentation in multiple areas, right? So all the way from, the lead generation, I'm sorry, are you asking about specifically around the adoption?
Yes, around, because you said step number three is experiment and so that you can refine the capabilities that drive adoption. To me, that means like basically experiment with the potential end users so that you can figure out, what are the best features that will give them value. That's what that sounds like to me. So I'm wondering if you guys did any experiments towards that goal.
Oh, yeah, sure. Definitely. There are many, many examples that I can give. For example, VMware is a customer for us. They are primarily using Vitiparad for talent acquisition, where they create a bunch of content and they want to make sure that all the recruiters leverage the content either from promoting in their social media about why a candidate should work for VMware to soliciting candidates, hiring, etc. Like I said, in order to establish the adoption for end user like recruiter, the consistency was helpful. The finding the right information for answer a question to a candidate was very helpful. But one feature, if I explain, is that the social media, we had a capability to post into social media of individual recruiters, why one should work with a VMware, or there may be a job opening that they want to promote in their social media. Mm-hmm. The next step of experimentation or iteration was that, the customer came back and said, hey, this is great what you have, but, I don't even want my recruiters to spend time on clicking on buttons to post it on their social media because the entire content for posting is managed and created and maintained by somebody centrally, a single person in the company. So they suggested, how about, you create a scheduling capability and a delegation capability where a recruiter can delegate on behalf of them to another central person who can automatically schedule the posting on whatever the frequency and whatever the time and the day of the time they want. And that is a classic example of how we refine the capabilities.
Yeah.
And a lot of it to say that, the customer contribution, this is where, we have to really understand what real customer problems are. And once you listen to them, then automatically the solution you come up with is something that they definitely use it because it's coming from them and they have the real pain with them.
Yeah. And step number four is adoption. And let me just caveat that is that, okay, now step number three, you spend that time with the end user, really figuring out what would be the best features that will actually be useful for them to use, right? But then adoption is a total different thing where it's like, okay, now you've created that feature. How do you get them to actually use it? So let's talk about this whole adoption topic.
Right. You know, in every step of the process in building a company, there are unique challenges that we have to deal with. And every time, you know, when I cross one challenge to another challenge, I always think that, oh my God, this is the most difficult one, but everything is a difficult challenge by itself. But, you know, the last step in the entire challenging process is the adoption. Because, you know, somehow we build a product and figure out the value proposition, and somehow we acquire a few customers initially. Now, how do you make sure that these customers are really successful? Successful meaning that, you know, the end users have to really start using the product.
And that's a good keyword, is that they're successful with your app. I like that.
Yeah, is it because, you know, the definition varies so much, but end of the day, for us to establish as a company, we have to have the customers, which are end users, start using the product on an ongoing basis so that we can have a repeatable revenue coming from that customer. And this is where we have to spend a lot of effort and energy beyond just coming up with the value proposition capabilities, but also helping them, nurturing them, training them on an ongoing basis, continuously talking to them, getting the feedback to make sure that they feel comfortable in using the platform is very important in order to successfully establish the adoption of the product itself.
And regarding adoption too, is that, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, that even though you're serving the customer, which is the company, in this case now VMware, right? That was the company. But the customer itself, they have this goal they have, but in that vein too, there's multiple personas or different stakeholders within the company that will end up getting value from it. So I'm thinking that when you're talking about adoption too, now you're figuring out how your product will apply to those different stakeholders, right? So talk about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so especially when we are selling the product first time, we mostly, you know, start talking to the decision makers such as managers or directors, you know, and we can definitely have a compelling value proposition for them. We know in our case, we had consistency, brand protection, and analytics in terms of, you know, which content is more effective, which salesperson using what collateral type of thing. That was very interesting and useful. But again, you know, it doesn't end there. And in order for end user to start using the product, in our case, take an example of VMware Recruiter. For recruiter to start using VDParrot, there should be enough content available in the product so that they can start using the product. So then, which means that another stakeholder is the content author, the content creator, who go and grab the content from multiple places, whether it is marketing department, hiring manager, benefits department, HR. So there's so many places they have to go and aggregate the content. So the product has to cater to the needs of these power users who are the content creators, authors who manage the content on an ongoing basis. And once the content is in the platform, then it becomes more powerful and attractive for end users to start using that product. So, you know, in every step of the way, we have to make sure that each one of these stakeholders are you know, satisfied with the product capabilities. And because, you know, a lot of these people,
so is that like saying that each stakeholder has to have an incentive to use the product?
Absolutely. Absolutely, okay. You're right on.
You also mentioned something about making sure that the product, you know, vitamin versus painkiller. Talk about that and how that drives adoption.
Yes. Like I said, right, you know, when we positioned the company initially, it was more like the consistency of message, speed, control, and speak with one voice. This resonates very well at the management level. Like I said, in our case, the end user is like a salesperson. They need to see that what is in it for me. Mm-hmm. So it's like painkiller. And I have a headache now. Don't give me a vitamin because I want my headache to go away right now so that, you know, I can live happily. So that's what we mean by painkiller. In our case, you know, we come up with solution like email marketing campaign where a micro email is like a salesperson has 100 users where he want to send a mass email only for those 100 users. That is something that today they use it using individual email sending out, which consumes a lot of time. And that is where they see immediate value. Oh my God, I can use this product. The second thing is they can immediately personalize the content just before sending out. You know, they can templatize the content that are stored in VDParrot, and we have dynamic variables where they can just enter the values which automatically substitutes, and all they have to do is just drag and drop into an email or a Word document for a proposal, and it just goes out. So these are like, you know, today they are doing the work in a more painful way or more with workarounds or in a time-consuming fashion. Mm-hmm. And if anything that helps them to improve their quality of life, or, you know, they can process more leads or process more customers, they would like that idea, because end of the day, it helps them to achieve their goals or metrics or the compensation, whatever it is. And we have to identify those painkiller type of solution that not only drives the adoption, but also it increases the stickiness so that we'll have a repeatable business.
So just to summarize that point is basically after the coming up with a list of core features, right, then you now have to figure out who are the core personas in that company that are going to use it, and then give them an incentive to use the product. But that incentive that you use that used to hold them to stick them to the product has to be something that really is solving a real problem that stakeholder has, like vitamin versus painkiller. The next thing that you said during the pre-interview regarding driving adoption is that, you know, it's one thing to get the right features and functions in your product, but you also have to have in addition, you also have to have user guides and how-to videos, collateral that helps them understand how to use the software. Talk about that.
Yeah, so, that's a very important point you brought up, because, we have to provide every possible help for the end user to adopt a product. And one of the key things are the training. And training is something that, you know, you can give, like in the product, you can build guided tours, or you can create how-to videos. And these days our videos are becoming really effective, where we have created for every feature like 15 second, 30 second videos, mm-hmm. which are very short in duration, but easy to consume. And it tells them exactly how to do certain things, which are very powerful. But providing a lot of these trainings, user guides, and all the materials, still we were not seeing the level of adoption that we wanted. And then we realized that, you know, my God, we need to do something different. And that is where we started hand-holding the end user during the training process. Like what we do is that we tell them how to do a particular function, how to use a particular capability in the product. And we will tell them, now you please do it hands-on yourself. And we will repeat this process for each and every capability so that they have a hands-on experience of actually using the product, which, you know, they will never forget going forward. I mean, if you see that according to the research, the user tend to remember 90% of what we say and do with the hands-on workshops.
And let me see if I can get that correctly, because on one hand, you can create a knowledge base that has user guides, user videos, and all that. But I'm wondering, mm-hmm. regarding this hands-on training, right? Is it like a situation mm-hmm. where, you know, maybe one of the support people, the support staff in your company has like office hours where, you know, any of the customers or trial users can sign up for like a hands-on demo, right? And when they get to that demo session, the goal of the demo is not just to have the customer support person just demo the software, how it works, but the goal will be to have them talk about the specific use case or challenge that they're trying to solve, and then guide them on how to do it themselves using your software.
Exactly. I ask them to do it in front of us so that we can watch it. Mm-hmm. We can guide them if they make mistakes, and then we can help them if they don't know how to use it. So that when they start doing everything themselves by clicking the mouse, dragging, dropping, creating content, saving, then they will know that which icons there, what function it does, and how to do it. So it becomes like, you know, it sticks in their head forever.
Yeah. And step number five, you mentioned that this is step number five, determine how to meet the needs of the customer. And I'm wondering, how is this different from determining the value proposition, which we did earlier?
Right. For customer, at the end of the day, it's a holistic thing, right? In our case, we have three different stakeholders: a management who makes the decision, who are more interested in consistency and analytics, whereas a content author is more interested in helping with the capabilities which helps them in content creation. And the end user is more interested in, you know, how they can improve their productivity or save time or acquire more leads or candidates, etc. Right. So if you really see, the expectations and the value propositions are different for different stakeholders. So value proposition kind of, you know, whatever we focus is specific to a particular persona or a stakeholder role. Whereas as a customer, it's a combination of all the three. It's not just one thing or the other thing. if we have to be successful with the customer, it means that we have to make sure that all the three stakeholders we have are absolutely pleased and satisfied with the product capabilities. So that's what I mean, that for a customer to renew the business, then there should be a support or an influence by all the stakeholders to say, that, hey, you know what, this is a great product. I cannot live without this product. Please don't take it away from me. And that's when...
Is this like saying, okay, yes, when you try to... determine the value proposition, you're kind of looking at it from the end user standpoint. Okay, what are the core features that we need to get in there so that that end user most likely will start, you know, getting value from it? But in this case, when you're saying determine the needs, you're looking at it from a holistic standpoint, like the entire company, making sure that at this very stage, you're looking at every stakeholder and making sure that for the product itself, it meets the need of the company and all the stakeholders involved as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, you also mentioned during the pre-interview that, you know, you guys, you know, keep talking to your leads, the people that, you know, the enterprise leads, and then you start being able to bucket them together depending on size and their expectations. Talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, even though we have one product platform which kind of caters, you know, we are more like a horizontal platform, and we are heavily focused on the three major use cases like talent acquisition, sales enablement, and customer support. So now think about... the sales enablement, right? So we sell this platform to large enterprises, to even small, medium business with 20, 30 users. So the range varies anywhere between per customer 20 users to 5,000 users. So the sales cycle is not exactly the same from customer to customer. So this is where it is very critical to bucket the size of the companies, like 1 billion plus revenue, which where, you know, we assume that 1,000 plus salespeople, then the sales cycle is much longer. It could be 3 to 6 months, depending on the type of the company. And even the vertical, like pharmaceutical, takes much longer than a technology company in the same industry size. So, and we also sell to like a, you know, 20 customer use case, where the sales cycle for me is like probably 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So we have to start figuring it out from the process point of view, when we break, you know, what is the, how best to break down the size in term, because the key factor for error is we need to figure out what is the sales cycle involved for a particular size of any particular size of the company or a industry vertical. The second thing is then how many cycles are the iterations I have to do in terms of whether creating standard demos and how many standard demos, and then how do we create custom demos, what kind of custom demos we have to do. And the expectations in terms of the capabilities, like for example, large enterprises invariably look for single sign-on, encryption, integration with other infrastructure. So when we pitch the solution to a large companies, we will more focus on these kind of capabilities and bells and whistles, what more relevant specific to large companies. And when we go to like a small size company or a medium size company, they don't care as much about the single sign-on kind of thing. So they are more interested, hey, what is the value here? How does this help me to save money or acquire more customer faster? So they're more looking at value proposition. And their decision making is way faster than a large enterprise, where in large enterprises there are a lot of consensus and too many departments are involved. You know, IT has to bless the solution before it gets into the company. So this is where we have to segment the customers in terms of their size as well as in terms of the industry vertical, and we have to have different proven process for each one of those segments.
And what I get from this very step itself, I guess maybe I can summarize what I'm understanding, is that by talking to many of these different leads, regardless of the company or the different enterprise leads, you guys are now able to bucket them and put them into a specific category based on the size of the company as well as some expectations that they have, right? And then as a result of doing that, you are now also able to create you establish a pattern of like, okay, depending on this type of company and this kind of size, these are the types of expectations that they have and what they are looking for in our product. And because of the size of the company, this is this type of sales process that we have to go through in order to close them as a customer, meaning that the bigger, larger companies will have a much more longer sales cycle. But then the companies that are, you know, small to medium size, right, or even maybe just getting in the early stages of being the enterprise, their own sales cycle is different. So basically, you become able to establish this pattern. And so based on the type of customer you're talking to, you now apply the right sales cycle to, the sales strategy to. right?
That's correct. That's correct. And it's an evolution process, you know, like you said, it's a learning process for us, and we do some kind of trial and error and A-B testing, and we know that, you know, which worked, which didn't work. But as you said, rightly said, the pattern being established by doing the same thing again and again, and you can start refining the process, and you get to a stage where you know that this is exactly what I have to do in order to take them to the next steps.
Awesome. And step number six, you say systematize the lead generation. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, you know, the one of the biggest thing is, you know, especially once you have a proven beta customers and happy customers, now the question is that how you can acquire 10 customers of similar size or type, or 100 customers, 1,000 customers, then you need to start thinking about, okay, how do you start sourcing these leads? Because, you know, it's a funnel, you know, you have to have maximum top of the funnel in order to get certain conversion at the bottom as customers. So this is where we have to figure out what are the different ways which really and effectively works for us in terms of generating the leads so that we can have a higher conversion rate as customers. So that's what I mean by systematizing the generation of leads.
Yeah, and you also mentioned that in this stage now, not only are you creating a systematized way to get the leads in, but also you're working on making sure that you're creating like videos, white papers, and resources for specific use cases. Talk about that.
Yeah, so now, you know, once we generate the leads, the very next step is and also we have, you know, as we talked about earlier, that we segment the customer. So once we know what segment we are targeting and we have the leads in that space, then we have a process of figuring out what's their use cases, you know, how many user base they have, and what's the real pain point that they have. And accordingly, we start pitching them or, you know, promoting them about how Video Parrot can help them to really solve the problems. And we start creating, based on the successful initial beta customers we have produced a bunch of white papers as well as specific use cases, case studies, where we can clearly articulate the value proposition that we have and what are the tangible benefits these companies have acquired by using Video Parrot. And these are the real illustrations that we leverage during the the demo stage or during the exploratory stage to...
You were about to talk about how email marketing is working for you guys for this step six part where we say, systematize lead generation. So talk about how email marketing is helping with that.
Right. So, we tried various ways of generating the leads. I think the winner for us so far is email marketing. What I mean by that is, we come up with, specific targeted messages which more look like a general email that we sent out. And we engage with several email marketing companies, and we send out like thousands of emails in a campaign specifically targeted to certain industry size or verticals or particular use cases. And we get almost 100 to 120 responses in terms of, hey, I'm interested, I want to see the demo, etc. And we are able to figure out to generate about 100 to 120 leads per campaign and drive them through, eventually become like, 3 to 4 customers. You know, that's the mechanism that we are using today to generate the leads and acquire the customers. And I think... For B2B, whatever is said and done, email is still the best way in a non-pervasive way. Reach out to the right executive who at their leisure can quickly look at it. And if it is something interesting and have a need for them in terms of the budget or the business requirements, then immediately they will reach out to us. I mean, that's exactly how we acquired Fortune 500 companies as customers. You know, we did not handle any contacts in those companies, but email was the one which made introductions to these executives, and we are successfully able to acquire them.
Yeah, I know that based on the size of the company and their need, that as we talked about earlier, that the sales process will differ a little bit. But I'm wondering how. Okay, let's assume now you have these emails that you've sent out. How does the flow usually work after they've received the email?
So typically, what we do is, we send out the emails and we get some responses from the leads. And the way it starts is that, hey, this is interesting. Tell me more. I want to learn more, or can we talk about your solution, etc. So immediate next step, what we do is that we send them out. A 5 minute video or 6 minute video specifically targeted to their use case, which kind of a teaser video which gives them an idea about what we do and what kind of use case problem we solve, etc. So then, you know, some customers will say, hey, this is interesting, you know, I don't have the need right now, but we'll talk about it 3 months down the line. But there are some customers who will say that, hey, you know what, this is really interesting and I really have this problem. Can we set up some time to see the product demo in action? So then that is a step where we'll say, sure, you know, then we will set up like 15-20 minutes call during which we call it as an exploratory phase where we talk to customers and our prospects and then understand really what problem they have and what is the solution they're looking for and how VDPirate can really fit to solve that problem. And once we have the exploratory, then we set up a follow-up call during which we will schedule a demo. And demo is typically we start with a standard demo, which is specific to that use case. But when we demonstrate it, we always tag along with the information we gather during the exploratory phase and start reinforcing and, you know, painting a picture how VDPirate can really help solve their problem that we understood in the exploratory phase.
Awesome.
Once we pass the standard demo process, you know, this I'm referring to a large organization where the sales cycle is longer. The next step we do is that we tell them, hey, you know what, why don't you give us some content? And we create bunch of widgets in our platform and organize them in proper folders with proper tagging, etc. And then we demonstrate to you almost like a live production system how this would look like in your situation when you implement it. No, that is the most effective demonstration that I've seen. Invariably, when we present to the prospects or buyer with their content for their use case and show them how their current problem can be solved, their eyes lit and then say, oh my God, this is exactly what I was looking for. And, you know, time and again, it's kind of proven for me the custom demos are becoming more and more effective, but we need to figure out how we can systematize and then scale this custom demo process. But I think that's the most effective one that helped us to acquire a lot of customers.
And that brings us to step number 7, where you say scale. So let's talk about what you mean when you say scale.
Yeah, you know, scale means for us particularly, we have established, product market fit, then acquired a few customers, and we know what value proposition we have. We kind of know entire process of all the way from lead generation to making the customer successful. And, you know, now the question is how can we exponentially grow by acquiring, 10x customers or 20x customers. So this is where this is what I mean by scaling. It's like initially we have few people, you know, there's typically founders are involved in the sales process. And like I said, we want to do more and more custom demos. We go out of the way to initially please the customers. But once we want to go en masse in terms of acquiring more and more customers, then we end up hiring more and more people, whether it is salespeople, inside salespeople, support people. Then how do we make sure that the process that we figured out are established successfully from the lead generation to convert customer conversion, we have to make sure that every new person, whether it is in-house or outsourced, follow the process so that they can get exactly the same results that we have produced. And so that they can help to get 10x customers or 20x customers. So this is where the processes are so important that would help us to replicate the methodology that worked before and make sure that every hire follows the same thing so that everyone can be successful.
What I get from this to this point of scaling is that, okay, yes, when it comes to scaling, you know, from the standpoint of you have leads coming in, and the way you guys have is that you're using demos that are personalized to, you know, to get these leads and transform them into customers. So obviously you have to scale that, the amount of demos you do. But looking at it from across the entire life cycle of that customer, they come in as anonymously to check out your content or whatever, right? And then they become a lead, right? And then you guys use email marketing, yes, and transform them into demos, and from demos into customers. And even when they're customers, you want to make sure they're successful with your app, hence the adoption. So I'm looking at the scale that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the scaling of the system applies to every part of that life cycle, right?
Oh, 100%, no doubt about it.
And how does that work with you guys? How are you applying scaling to all the different parts of the life cycle?
We are trying to document the whole process, and we are also establish some guided challenger sales type of things. Like I said, right, we identify a mechanism to generate the leads, and we double down on that so that because we have seen that it works, and so that works great for email campaign. Now, in the process of driving the leads to become a customer, this is a more intensive process where the pre-sales engineers and salespeople are involved. And as and when more people start involving, then we have to continuously train these users and also implement the rules and processes inside the product, whether it is CRM systems or with NVIDIA Parrot, so that every salesperson follows those steps as a guided selling process. So, you know, this is training, education, and actual experience of doing the job, hands-on all the time. That's the only way that we can scale this and bring more and more people with exactly the same knowledge that we have, that has worked for us before.
So would this scaling kind of be like, for those aspects of the life cycle that you can automate, you automate those, and then for those aspects that require a human being to actually do it, then you have to make sure that you have a real written out procedure or process on how that person who's going to do the work has to do the work in order to deliver the results that you guys expect. That's how. I just want to make sure.
Yes.
And then now that we're coming to the end of the interview, I'm wondering, you know, how can the listener, you know, use this process that we've gone through over, you know, so far to start acquiring new enterprise customers?
Yeah, you know, like I said, you know, we tried so many methods of generating the leads. And the most successful method, you know, I'll just give you the four methods that are really helped us. The number one by far is the email marketing campaign. Hands down, that is the best method, which is the most cost effective as well as most effective in terms of generating the results itself. And immediately following that is content marketing is very, very effective. In fact, we are getting almost a couple of really big customers through the web leads that came to our website and then filled up the form. So because we are heavily focusing on content marketing as well, you know, we produce really high quality ebooks. We continuously blog as thought leaders. We in fact even leverage the industry thought leaders to write articles in our ebooks or blogs. So that way we more promote the thought leadership and more, you know, educational content for salespeople or support people or recruiters, which kind of drives the traffic to website. You know, this content marketing, one has to have patience. You don't get the leads immediately. You don't get the lead and the leads won't become customer. They take, you know, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. But it helps not only in acquiring customers over a period of time, but it helps to improve the brand awareness in the market. It kind of acts like a public relations and also helps to improve the SEO, etc. When people are trying to search your product, you automatically, organically come on the top of the list. And the third method that really helped us or we follow heavily is the outbound outbound sales call. So which means that, you know, we have list of contacts and we have inside salespeople who sit and dial the calls. And, you know, it's more laborious task, but we are getting good results. And, you know, the cost of customer acquisition is well within the range that we have put ourselves. And it's working so far. And the fourth method is obviously, you know, the Rolodex of contact. You know, we have so many years of experience and we would have acquired many of the contacts who are in decision-making positions at different places. So we reach out to our own network or our investors' networks to get a contact. And then, you know, we build a relationship with them and then we show the product and value proposition and then we acquire the customers. So, you know, these are the four methods that I would strongly advise. But again, you know, it changes from company to company and the solution that they have and whom they are selling. But I think email marketing definitely is very well proven across industries for B2B marketing.
And how has your company now been transformed as a result of, you know, implementing this process for getting enterprise customers?
So now we know, like, it's now we are at a stage, like I said before, we are trying to scale the company. And with a few additional people that we have hired, we are able to train them up with the process that we have established. And it's working great, you know. It's because everything is written down as a process, step-by-step process in a document, and have proper collateral available as a guided selling tool in the process. And once you establish a mechanism of lead generation using various techniques that work best for us, then everything is coming together for us and it's kind of taking off. But we still have to make sure that the scaling is well established on the customer success side, which we are actually, as we speak, in the midst of it. But I think we are very well, we have seen really good results so far by implementing the process, what we have done so far, and to up to the stage of acquiring the customers.
That's awesome. And so what's the very next step for someone who has listened to the entire interview? What was the next step they should take in order to get started with implementing this process for acquiring enterprise customers?
You know, if I just recap the previous conversation from the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, first establish the product market fit. That's the most important thing. Once it is there, then you need to figure out, you know, whether you want to go to enterprise route or you want to sell this platform to consumers. It also depends on, you know, what product, you know, a lot of customers, entrepreneurs build the product right from the beginning, targeted for a particular market. Then once you have, you know which product you are selling and you know what market segment you are selling, then the next thing is that identifying the real value propositions that really resonates very well with the end users, where the adoption has to happen and the stickiness has to be established. I think that's the most critical step, where figuring it out, what is the pain point that the end user has, and do you have something that incentivizes the end user to start using your product? Then the very next step is scaling the company itself. You know that you have acquired a few beta customers, you established value proposition, you kind of seen the success of adoption. Then how can you reproduce the same thing with 5 customers, 10 customers, 100 customers? That becomes most critical at the end.
And, you know, what's the best way for the listener to connect with you and thank you for doing the interview?
Well, you know, they can always reach out to me on my email, anil@vdparrot.com. We have our web pages where they can reach out to me through the contact form. We have VDParrot app on the Twitter as well as on Facebook. We, you know, there are multiple ways they can reach out. And also, obviously, my profile, it's there on the LinkedIn. Anyone can send me the request as well.
And I'm curious, are there any questions that you feel that I should have asked you that would, you know, help to round out this interview based on what we're talking about that I didn't ask you yet? If so, you know, pose the questions and the answers.
You know, probably one good question would be if I have to redo this whole thing. You know, the VDParrot is almost 3 years old now. So if you redo this, what would I do different?
Yeah, probably what would you do different?
Right. So, you know, I would rather spend, like I said, right in the earlier example, we built the product for 1.5 years thinking that this is exactly what the end customer wants. But eventually, when we acquired the customers and they start using the product, we realized, oh my God, what we thought that was a full product doesn't even meet 20 or 30% of the real end user's needs. So that means that it's a big gap of 60-70% of the capabilities, which we have to start building over and over again. So now, if I have to redo it, I rather focus on really spending time, you know, pick your target market, pick the end user where you think that he or she is the one who has to use your product to make it successful. Spend a lot of time day in their life, you know, what works, what doesn't work, what tool they use, what kind of inefficiencies they have, and what really they're looking for, what would to make their life better or achieve their metrics or goals much better than what they're doing it today. And then build the platform and then worry about generating the leads or scaling the company. But spend enough time to figure it out, the value proposition that you have and who is your end user and how do you incentivize the end users to use your product. That would significantly cut down the effort that you have to waste in a subsequent phase after acquiring the customers.
Well, I like that you shared that. And now I'm speaking to you, the listener. If you've enjoyed this interview, I want you to do us a favor. I want you to give us your feedback, your ratings, and do that on iTunes by going to sweetprocess.com/iTunes. And if you are using an Android phone, you can do that by going to sweetprocess.com/Stitcher. Anil, thanks for doing the interview.
Owen, thank you so much. I really appreciate you giving us an opportunity.
Before you go, we want to leave you with a free gift. Get your free systemization checklist. Avoid wasting valuable time documenting procedures for the wrong tasks. Get it right the first time with the systemization checklist. Download the checklist by going to sweetprocess.com/checklist.